Mike O'Mara, Radio Entertainment.
Episode two.
It's our second episode, ladies and gentlemen, of Political Persuasions. It is your charming host and host, Mr. Chris Freitz and Mr. Mike O'Mara, with another episode of our weekly political get-together known as Political Persuasions. Mr. Freitz, how are you today?
I am wonderful. Was that the underwater introduction? You sounded
I don't
like
know what
you
I
were.
Do. Say with the president speaking yesterday, I figure we can all make
well,
funny
did you
sounds
see,
with our mouths.
Did you see that? Somebody tweeted, somebody said, I'm not making a joke here. In all seriousness, was he having a stroke at the end of that announcement? Because he kind of swallowed a little in his face.
And on our regular show this week, it sounded strokish to me.
It sounded strokish, but you also get that cotton mouth when you get the
yes.
TV lights and it's in
right.
front of you. So. And he doesn't seem like he's, gone anywhere. He's still on the Twitters. So, I don't think he's suffered any kind of medical emergency. So that's good. Never would wish any harm on our president.
Well, since you brought it up and since we both brought it up, let's start our show with a brief prayer from the president this week. Let's do that.
God bless the United States.
All right. Here's the thing. If he is okay, which really... He's the president. If he's okay, I'm happy
yes.
that he's okay. No one, I don't wish ill on anybody in the political world. I really, really don't, even though you hear that with our divided states of America. But I will tell you, if he is fine, I will enjoy this tape more for a very long time. Can you play it one more time, Rob? Just to,
God bless just to hear. The United States.
Oh, man.
That could be political persuasions this week that I could just
that's our show. Thank you guys for listening. No, it's amazing. I mean, it is really funny. I haven't listened. One more time, Rob.
Just
yeah.
God, this is good.
United States.
Oh, my God.
And he's fine. That's why we could laugh about it.
Well, but, supposedly he's fine.
But,
let me ask you this. How tight-lipped are... I mean, you've been around this... I would say if there was a problem, what was the Kevin Kline movie?
Dave.
I worry about that if something was, you'd never know it, would you? You would have, could be back there, they'd be better at covering that up than anything that could potentially happen with Russia.
You can't really hide the president. I mean, remember like Bill Clinton wanted to make a McDonald's run. He couldn't even get out, of the bubble to go, get a Big
right.
Mac. So it's very difficult, particularly with this president. Like if you don't see him tweeting by 4 a.m., you're like, oh, something's wrong. Right, somebody could tweet for him, but like, who are you gonna put up during the day? Right,
you can't hide him. But I'm saying that, don't you think that if there was some underlying medical issue, and I think just to be accurate here, we have to play it just one more time to for our listeners to gather whether there would be any medical problem here. Just play it very quickly, Rob, if you
God
don't mind.
Bless. United States.
Very nice.
Don't you think this White House, more than any other White House, would be good at preventing any medical information from getting out?
I think they're all good at it. I mean, in fact, right. I mean, let's remember, Mike. I mean, he had the best medical evaluation I ever saw during a campaign, where his doctor came out and said he is tremendously strong and masculine
right.
and the strongest man I've ever seen of his age in time, and he shall overcome any sickness with his wherewithal, right? Like, it was just amazing. Like, that it was like the best. It was like a Trumpian statement from his doctor. He found
yeah,
like,
and then they showed the doctor and he looked like a Grateful Dead bass
yeah.
player.
That was my favorite part, the long
there.
Hair, the former hip. He got a Deadhead sticker on his Cadillac.
I should point out that as we tape this show today, I was frustrated because we taped the show last Thursday, and it was the day after that the Matt Lauer story broke, or the week after that the Matt Lauer story. We missed that one, right? Is that the one we missed? And I don't know whether I'm right or wrong about that. There's so much going on, it's tough to keep
it's
track
tough
of.
It's tough to keep track.
And
as
was it
we
last
speak,
Thursday we taped? I thought we taped last Tuesday.
Last
came
Tuesday.
Out. The show so came out that's on right. my it birthday. Was, that's how
that's
I remember.
That's exactly it. That's when it happened. I get my shows confused, and you get now Oscar and Robert scrambling, looking around. What day was it? How many shows are we doing? What are we doing? What's going on here? As we tape today, and that's the reason I brought this up, Al Franken is scheduled for a press conference at 11:30 Eastern time. So during the taping of the show, he may or may not resign. We don't know. What's the latest you're hearing about?
Well, according to a report from Minnesota Public Radio, he's out. He's done.
Yeah.
And and I've not seen that reporting matched. It's always dangerous to kind of get out there. All the sourcing was Democratic officials familiar with Franken's thinking. Franken's thinking could change between that report and when he comes out there. But what was interesting is, you know, we now have seven women who have accused him of some kind of sexual harassment or sexual impropriety. The latest was just yesterday, right. which was Wednesday, where it was another story of a Democratic congressional aide. Her boss had been on Franken's radio show. This is back, I think, in 2006. The boss left. Franken, you know, creeps up on her as she's like gathering her stuff and like tries to give him a little, you know, well, I guess the Franken special now, right? Which is like some kind of smooch on the lips. You know, like that seems to be wow. his MO, according to these accusers. And she, you know, ducks out of the way and he says, I'm an entertainer. I'm allowed to get this. This is my birthright as an entertainer. And so,
yeah, it's bad.
It's then bad. You saw like almost all the Democratic women in the Senate say he's got to go. Patty right. Murray of Washington said it wasn't coordinated. They just all kind of got there at the same time. They'd been texting and talking about it for a week now. He's friends. Mm-hmm. These are his friends, too. I mean, this is tough, right? Like, you work with these folks. You become friendly with them. And then this happens. And we talked about this last week, Mike. And I said to you, I said, does he have to go? You said no. Based on the new information, I mean, we're before the decision, so you can still take a stand here. Does he need to go, or should he stay?
This is what I think. If you're going to have any credibility with this issue, I think the tribalism has to be put aside, and you have to just take all of these cases on. I don't want, maybe merit is the wrong word to use, but I do believe that when you've got Al Franken and the multiple accusers, and that's, I don't know if I referenced that last week, but I did believe that if we were going to get more of these, you're going to get more of these coming along. It starts out with something with Leanne Tweeten, and then it just grows and grows and grows, and now I'm picturing Al Franken in his Senate office, you know, saying, excuse me, Lydia, Lydia, can you come over and help me with the copy machine here? I need this, right? No, I think he's got to go. And here's what I also believe. I think that it is becoming obvious that there is a consensus on the Hill that the policy should be, if these allegations prove problematic, you're out. You're gone, because we have to have credibility with women on this issue. And I think that's what the Democrats appear to be doing. And it does not seem, in the case of Judge Roy Moore, obviously, that it's being done on the far right with a guy like Moore, who's deny, 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 and then getting the support of all the Republicans in Alabama.
Right. And that's what we talked about last week, was this idea of, well, you don't really want to see Franken go because he's on your team. And well, we need to see what happens. But you did call for John Conyers to step down because mm-hmm. there were those multiple allegations. He has right. since resigned. We're getting some news. Franken believes he can no longer serve effectively as a senator yep. and is resigning. Sure. So it looks like by the end of this show, we may have a former senator, Al Franken. That's not surprising. To your point, that's just what you said. If you can't serve effectively, if these accusations continue to come out. But what's interesting to me, Mike, and you reference this on Roy Moore, it's not just Roy Moore. Right. Look at Blake Farenthal. He's a mm-hmm. Republican congressman. He settled an $80,000 harassment claim with a former communications director. Right. There's been no call from Republicans in the House for him to step down, for him to resign. Certainly not as high profile as a former Saturday Night Live turned senator, but certainly a problem for Republicans. And there was a great story, I believe it was in Politico, one of my former employers. They did a story about that woman, that communications director. She was essentially told, look, don't bring this complaint against Farenthal because it's going to kill your career. And she said, well, I have to. She settles with Farenthal, she can't get a job. She leaves Washington. She's like temping and doing babysitting jobs. She's 30 some years old because she came forward at a time when you didn't do that because it killed your career.
So that's when the cultural change.
Exactly. So when you hear this, well, why don't women just come out and say something because, you know, it's pretty easy? It's not. I mean, it was a big risk. And so it's interesting, you know, Democrats are putting themselves on higher moral ground at this point, I think.
That's what I was going to say.
Than Republicans are. Mm-hmm.
The high ground is essential. And I think really that's, I'm all for that. And I think that, once again, we get into a pattern with these guys, you know, and when my wife looked at me and said, oh, you men and your wieners. And she was looking. And the thing is, you seem to see when you get one and then suddenly it's seven and then it's another one. There is this pattern that exists. And, you know, it's strange to me when you see the multiple times. You're seeing the multiple times because if this behavior goes unpunished and it goes unreported, mm-hmm. well, of course these guys are going to be compulsive and come back again and again and again. And I'm glad to see, look, you know where I come from politically, but I am glad to see at least one party is taking the moral high ground. And if that's the case, you look, all of these allegations have to be taken one at a time. You have to look at the situation. But obviously, with seven women coming forward on Al Franken, that's just the deal. He was called into Schumer's apartment and said, hey, this is it. And I've changed my mind because I thought it was an isolated incident. And it seems to me with all of these problems that we have with these kind of guys, these don't seem to be isolated incidents. They seem to be, it always seems to end up being a pattern.
Right. And for Franken, it was the forced kiss and the selfie grab ass, right? Where it's,
that's what started it.
I'm going to take, you know, I'm going to take a picture with you. And there were accusations that he, you know, grabbed butt cheek or, you know, grabbed side and copped a feel during these selfies, you know, none of which is acceptable. And now he's going to pay the price for it. But the other thing that strikes me on this, Mike, is the idea that, look at the two caucuses in the Senate. And if you look, there's not as many women in the Senate as there should be. You know, women make up half of this country. They do not make up half of the Senate chamber. But most of the women who serve in the United States Senate serve in the Democratic Party. We saw those Democratic women senators come out and say, Al Franken's a friend, but he's got to go. That, I think, had a big impact yesterday. And mm-hmm. you don't see that as much on the Republican side. So I think you have to think about it does matter who you're sending to Washington, what kind of culture you create. And I'm not sure if the Democratic Senate caucus didn't have as many women who came forward yesterday as they did, whether or not Al Franken would still be ducking and covering and trying to kind of ride this thing out.
Well, since we are all but putting the wraps on the you know, Senate life of Al Franken, what do you hear? What do you know about this Lieutenant Governor Tina Smith? That the rumors are all over the place that this is going to be who the governor picks to fill out his term. Do you think A, that's true, and B, what do you hear, if anything, about Tina Smith?
So that's the reporting I hear, and the reason why she is the top choice to fill the vacancy that would be created if Al Franken steps down is because she doesn't have higher aspirations to serve in Congress, that she would be a placeholder until they can do a special election in 2018. So this is a wide-open Senate primary. It really will shuffle Democratic politics in Minnesota. It's a huge deal. And she is someone who, at least the early reporting is, the reason the governor would put her in there is because she does not want to seek that office, so nobody gets an advantage as the incumbent.
Until she gets in there. Until she gets into the United States Senate.
Nice,
she realizes that. This is a nice club.
One
wow.
of 100, man. I mean, there's not very many.
Leaving.
This is pretty neat. So that is the story on the lieutenant governor, and we'll see kind of how this all shakes out. But that will be the next set of stories that you will see is everybody positioning themselves to run in 2018.
We'll let you know when we have final word on Al Franken, if it's during this taping. We move on now to what I don't know enough about this issue. What I do know is that it seems to me that it would be a potentially dangerous situation. And that is the announcement. In fact, when we were playing the clip of Trump at the end of that, when he was saying God bless the United States with his loose upper plate, he was making the announcement about moving the embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv and setting up a new American embassy in Jerusalem. And from everything I've read and heard about this, Chris, it seems as though this is a potentially dangerous, volatile move that will, you know, is in the most dangerous and volatile part of the world. It's scary. It's very, very scary, and I just don't know what's going on with it. I guess he's pleasing a certain faction in Israel, but you know more about it than I do.
Yeah, so here's the situation, Mike. You have the President of the United States reversing longstanding American foreign policy. Our embassy has always been in Tel Aviv. There are no embassies in Jerusalem for any country in the world because Jerusalem is disputed. It is part of the dispute between Palestinians and the Israelis. That is a divided city. I mean, you know, part of that city is under Palestinian control. So that has always been part of the peace talks. How would you split up Jerusalem so that if you had a two-state solution, it could be a capital to both of those states, one newly formed Palestinian state and Israel? President Trump made this campaign promise essentially to placate a base of evangelical Christians. They would love to see.
That's the thing I don't get. That's what I understand that there's always been this connection between the far right in Israel and the evangelicals in the. This is a Bible thing, is it not? I just get my brain starts to hurt when I start thinking about this.
Yeah,
but
so
he did make the promise to the evangelicals.
He made the promise that he would do this. He thought that that was the place where the American embassy should be because that's the heart of Jerusalem. And of course, Jerusalem is the capital, whether you are Muslim, Christian, or Jewish. I mean, you know, the thing about visiting Jerusalem, if you've ever been there, you know, you go to the Dome of the Rock, which is it's the rock that Muslims believe Muhammad ascended into heaven from. It also is a rock that is very important in Jewish religion. So, like, they're fighting over the same rock, dude. Like, that's kind of how
I feel like I want to hear Chevy Chase come in and just say, you know, say the prayer at the Christmas Vacation movie, you know, or Vacation when he's saying the prayer with all that. I mean, look, and I'm not disrespecting anyone's religion at all, but when I channel my inner Bill Maher here, and I say to myself, this is all everyone's interpretation of the man in the sky, and how what I know in the reality of the situation is it seems to me that Donald Trump is taking a giant can of gasoline and he is pouring it into a region where this is not the time for that, and he's doing it to pander once again to not only the evangelical far-right base in the United States, but also the same group of people in Israel. And I think it could result in some very serious problems for the United States.
Well, certainly, you know, Trump is a friend of Benjamin Netanyahu, the prime minister of Israel. Netanyahu loves this move. The mayor of Jerusalem loves this move. So there is a faction on the right in Israel that is very happy that Trump took this move, particularly after the strained relationship between Israel and President Obama's administration. But Mike, you raise a great point here, which is all the other Arab countries in the Middle East, including some other Western countries. President Abbas of the PLO essentially lobbied other Western democracies to tell Trump not to make this move.
They all told him not to make this move.
And so I hit up a friend of mine this morning who was, she was a lawyer for the PLO. And I said, how does this go over? What happens? Because now we have a threat of a third intifada, which, you know, the second intifada, if you remember, in the early 2000s, brought tons of violence, car bombings, bus bombings. And are we going to return to that? That's an open question, and Hamas is calling for a third intifada to protest this. So when you say pour gasoline, that could be a response to this. The other thing is, remember, this goes in what I can't square, which is not unusual for President Trump, is he kind of made two competing promises, right? He said, on one hand, I'm going to move the embassy to Jerusalem. I'm also going to negotiate Middle East peace because I am the great deal maker.
I'm the deal maker.
And this, you know, when I was talking to my friends who are smart about this, they said, there's no way the PLO is is not going to talk to the Americans. You know, there's always been skepticism about whether America is an honest broker or whether they're siding with Israel. This essentially puts all the chips on Israel's side. They look at it and say, well, Jerusalem is disputed, and now the United States is putting its embassy in the capital.
Is there anything strategically outside of enhancing a relationship with Israel, our known ally of Israel, is there anything strategically beneficial? Because it seems to me that you're pleasing a certain group of people. You're pleasing people in Israel that have this. And there are plenty of people in Israel that would disagree that they don't want the embassy moved because they know it's going to ignite tensions in the area. Is there anything beyond just making a certain group of people happy and fulfilling a campaign promise? Is there anything strategically important to this?
I don't think I have not seen or talked to anybody who can show me a strategic advantage the United States gets out of this, other than politically, President Trump can say, look, I promised this, I did it, and I am going
always
to
a great
be
reason
my
to do things.
I'm gonna be my own guy. Okay. I told you what I was gonna do. I'm gonna come in and do it. And the result, though, I think, Mike, is that the Palestinians are not going to deal with Donald Trump and Jared Kushner on a Middle East peace plan. The Trump administration is still putting one together. They haven't put it out yet. And this makes it a non-starter. This makes it, unless there was some kind of hidden quid pro quo that we don't know about with the Palestinians, there's no way that they can negotiate with the Trump administration now.
What do you think the odds of that are? That there's a hidden quid pro quo on this.
I mean, you never know, and that would be the strategic advantage. Look, we're going to do this, but don't worry, we got your back. You know, in this other way. So maybe there's something we're not seeing here. But as of right now, it's just a head scratcher to me, Mike.
So once again, we have, and it kind of leads into the next thing we wanted to talk about. You have a president who, from my vantage point, is paying attention to his base. He is focusing on his base. There is absolutely no indication that he's going to reach out to the other team at all. And once again, with the national monuments and taking back land around these national monuments, that's another example of something that was promised on the campaign trail. He is going now to alienate Native Americans and people that are frustrated with what appears to be a federal land grab around some of these amazing sites in America. And there is the base again. And the rest of us sitting by shaking our heads saying, why? And perhaps the same answer. Well, he promised he would do it and now he's doing it. But it's a frustrating time for people that are on the other side looking at this saying, okay, he's completely catering to his base and nothing else really matters. And that to me is not necessarily very presidential.
So I disagree with you on this one a little bit. This one is bigger than his base. I mean, this is conservatives and this is a lot of local folks. I mean,
okay.
Let's break this down, right? So what President Trump did this week, he took two national monuments, Bear's Ears and the Grand Staircase Escalante in Utah. He reduced the size of Bear's Ears from about 1.3 million to about 200,000 acres. So shrunk it by about 85%, right? And then he took the Grand Staircase Escalante, shrunk that by about 50%. Clinton designated the Grand Staircase as a national monument. Obama, on the way out in December of 2016, hit Bear's Ears. Utah, from the county commission to the governors and the congressional delegation, all those elected officials opposed President Obama's designation of Bear's Ears as a national monument.
Why?
Because this is something that, unless you've lived in the West and looked at land use, rubs Westerners the wrong way. Two-thirds of all the land in Utah is run by the federal government. That just, you know, if you're a rancher, if you're somebody who lives in Utah and you can't access the land you live next to because the federal government says, oh, you know what? We've decided that we have a better use of this. And it's how it was done, Mike. So this
I
is
don't want any free grazers. I don't want any free grazers on my land. It's always a Kevin Costner movie for me with that. Like, so you're saying that the attitude among citizens out in that part of the world, they shouldn't have done it in the first place. Is that what we're talking about?
And how they did it, right? Like, this is not a national park. The Congress comes in and says, hey, we're going to make a national park, Yellowstone National Park. A national monument is something a president can do. And it uses
it's still preserving land, though.
Right, but it's preserving the land under the Antiquities Act. And it's this idea that there are antiquities, there are sites that need to be preserved, and the law says you should pick the smallest amount of land that is possible to preserve that site. 1.35 million acres was a huge overreach as far as people were concerned. And the way Trump has dialed it back, many people are saying it still preserves the antiquities that are there, the national monuments and the things that we should
keep.
So you
say you've lived out west and you can relate to the way people look at this issue.
Absolutely.
You've got Democrats and Republicans that can line up if they're in these areas
yes.
about this. I see the way it was been framed to me, I thought this was just preserving open spaces,
absolutely.
Beautiful open
and
spaces.
And when you look at the coverage on this, you know, you have a small minority who live there who say, you know what, this is a bit of an overreach. And everybody else who doesn't live there says, I don't know, let's preserve open space. Let's preserve the great American West. And
that's me.
And that's me, too. I mean, but I don't have to live there. I don't have to go around all of this land just to get my business done. I can't
drive a car through there.
In some cases, you can't. Right. Like, so it depends. Or you can't, you know, can you graze there, or can you log there, or
free grazers.
What kinds of things can you do? And so that whole idea that you don't have control over the land that, you know, has been in your family sometimes for generations does bring Republicans and Democrats together.
Where do the Native Americans come into it, though?
Oh, well, they believe that, you know, this is just that it should be preserved. And by shrinking it, the United States government is just stealing more of their land because, you know, frankly, it was their land to begin with. Right. Like, we took it from them. And then, you know, it was preserved.
Chris, let me tell you the way I look at it. And whenever there's anything, and I don't care what the law is, to be honest with you, I just like the idea of, you know, I am in the majority of people around the country that kind of say open space, not a bad thing. When I'm up in Maine, we have a lot of conservancies up there mm-hmm. where if you don't have national parks like Acadia National Park up in Maine, you've got conservancies like the Frenchman's Bay Conservancy, which goes out and through private donations purchases tracts of land that they preserve. Mm-hmm. And when you're in the rural West, and when you're in places like the great state of Maine, places with open spaces, I think that anyone who's lived in Manassas, Chris, can tell you that preserving some open space is, it's just a positive. And I maybe I'm wrong, but I get the feeling that no matter what you where you come down legally on this, you are still... That the Obama was not, it may have been an overreach, but it was an overreach that was well-intentioned. Is that legitimate?
Well, I think Democrats would side with that, right? But then it gets into intentions as opposed to what the law says. And what is interesting, so outdoor groups, Native Americans, are going to challenge President Trump on this. And it's going to take to court for the first time, we may get a precedent over the use of the Antiquities Act. Can a president use the Antiquities Act as broadly as Clinton and Obama and George W. Bush did? And if that's the case, is it a presidential prerogative and the next president can come in and shrink that? Or is it a permanent piece of... does it become a permanent piece of antiquity and that you cannot change that? Or can you only do it permanently by making it a national park, which is a congressional responsibility? So we're going to get a court case to say legally, how much authority does the president have? Because, wow. You know, we elected Donald Trump. He said he was going to do this. Now he's done it. But you talk about, do Republicans and Democrats come together on fighting the overreach by Obama administration? The answer is yes. It's also yes that Republicans and Democrats, the hook and bullet crowd, the sportsmen, come together to say, no, we should leave it as a big open space and preserve it for generations to come, right?
So that's why I do this show with you, because you're smarter than me and you read more and you know more. So that, I mean, that's enlightening. I understand that. And of course, but it doesn't change what team I'm rooting for, Chris.
No, that's, and that is kind of where we are in America, right? Oh, I understand that. But, man, I still hope my guys win, right?
Yep. Well, now, real quick, because you mentioned the that. What do you call them? The hook and what crowd?
The hook and bullet crowd.
The hook and speaking of the hook and bullet crowd, how about that for a second?
That's really good, actually.
And this is the last thing we wanted to touch on this week on political persuasions. Some very quiet legislation passed. It wasn't quiet for the entire run, but it got passed very quietly and very quickly. The House passed some gun legislation this very week. And it's pretty stunning with the year that we have had that that this got through. You wanted to talk about what was passed in the House of Representatives this week.
Yeah, I just thought this was amazing on the heels of the Las Vegas shooting and the Texas church shooting, that the first piece of legislation that the United States House of Representatives passed this week was a Conceal Carry Reciprocity Act, which allows you, if you have a concealed carry permit in a place like Colorado, to then bring your concealed carry gun to a place like New York, which essentially bans most concealed carries in almost all circumstances, which is fascinating. One, from gun rights. I mean, this was hugely backed by the NRA, and a Republican, controlled House passed this through. But the other thing that's interesting to me about it, Mike, is that, when you talk about states' rights, well, where does that leave states? If New York doesn't want concealed carry, but now we have to allow, Colorado residents who have it to participate.
So if I have a Florida driver's license, I can bring my Glock up to New York where it's illegal,
and you can take it in Times Square where there'll be a million people in a couple of weeks for New Year's Eve. And then that's why you have the governor of New York and some of the law enforcement officials saying, are you kidding me? We can't have that at a place.
Another win for the NRA, and I don't know who I'm madder at, the people that vote with the NRA every time, or the Democrats that are so busy yelling at Al Franken that they don't have time to line up and scream at the top of their lungs about this. And that's what they count on. I always believe that. I believe that it is such a sophisticated operation from the NRA. I think they get this legislation through, and it goes through without a headline. It's stunning to me. And
well, to be fair, I mean, it's in the news. I mean,
it's in the news, but it's not in the news like Al Franken's in the
news.
That's
right.
It's not in the news like Jerusalem's in the news. But it's stunning that it happens. And once again, this is it's the last time I think that our legislators should be thinking about this kind of stuff. And we should be thinking about how to keep people safe from tragedies like Las Vegas.
Well, I
just can't believe it.
I mean, I can believe it in as much as that the NRA can do this because they get results. When Democrats went up against the NRA back in the early 90s, they lost, and they lost their seats. And the NRA was able to take them out, particularly, Democrats in more rural areas. And that is the fear of God. So they will vote against it, but they're not necessarily going to stand up and shout about it. And it was a foregone conclusion in this Republican control.
Some of them will, but not a lot.
But the ones from the urban areas, ones who have no and Democrats sometimes vote for this stuff.
It's funny when you say take them out too. I think of the term take them out. It's just that would
bad. No pun intended. Did not mean a distasteful pun there. But
it's just terrible though. That's part of the reason people hate Congress in this country. Because this kind of stuff happens, and I think if you polled everybody in the United States, they'd say, what's the last thing you should do? Well, the last thing you should do is pass legislation that allows you to carry a hidden gun to another state, and really we should think about maybe banning some of these weapons in the first place that result in the massive loss of life. It defies imagination, but we do love our guns in America. We really do love our guns.
We love our guns, and despite polling that shows, broad support for tightening up background checks, for banning assault rifles, that kind of legislation not moving through a Republican-controlled Congress, but a concealed carry is.
The cool thing about political persuasions in our second episode, has Franken resigned, Oscar? Is that what's happening?
Sources now saying he's resigned. He's not said it himself, but it looks like we were right earlier in the show, Mike. It looks like he's out, so we don't have to.
We actually
retape.
Are doing political persuasions when a major story breaks.
Maybe
we're not 100% sure. We do have. By the way, early on,
happening now.
This, This is a fledgling show. I want to say thank you to everybody for your wonderful feedback. We do appreciate that. Chris has come today. Mr. Freights has come armed with some correspondence from you, the listeners, ladies and gentlemen. And that's great. We love the feedback, and we want more of it. Share it with us, Chris.
Yeah, I love it. So I just
sound like Trump just then. Share first, Chris.
The United States.
God bless the United States.
So you guys love Mike O'Mara, you love political persuasions, and you like us together is the takeaway from Twitter. Holly Quate at Holly Quate says, you and Mike O'Mara make a great team. Professional broadcast experience really shows. I was surprised by that. I thought thanks, Holly. That's nice. An actual conversation without the rants and outrage that make other podcasts tiring to listen to. Good job. We also had Ian at Kid Charlemagne. He says, awesome show. I am so glad Political Persuasions has come out of hiatus. There was great chemistry between Mike O'Mara and Freights and a balance in viewpoints. That's what we try to bring. And somebody after my own heart at New Jersey 727 says, Trump takes one step forward, two steps back. Good show today. I'm less generous with that guy, so I appreciate your point of view. Ben Sawyer says, just listen to episode one, new podcast, and thoroughly enjoyed it. Already looking forward to the next one. And I asked you guys, what do you want to hear? Hit me up on Twitter, at Freights. I will answer your questions. And John Noonan asks, he said, what's the status of passing fiscal year 2019 budget? I have read about temporary budget bills into January 2018.
That's a wonky question. You're the wonky guy.
Super,
so you have to answer that
super
one.
Wonky. And I answered him on Twitter, right. But I want to answer him on the show too.
Go ahead.
You know, the idea. So John, Congress hasn't passed all of its spending bills by the October deadline in over 20 years, right? So what will happen is what happens every year. They're going to do some continuing resolutions to try to keep the government funded so it doesn't shut down. That would be bad for Republicans. They're having a hell of a time doing that. What I expect is they're going to roll all of their 12 budget bills together early next year into one, what they call omnibus bill. They're going to try to pass that bad boy and get it off their back. You'll see all kinds of other things hung on that because it's one of the only must-pass pieces of legislation to go through, and that's probably how they'll do it. They may tie the debt ceiling to that because, remember, the United States spends all its money, and it says, oh, we got to increase our credit limit. We're going to do that. They need to do that as well. Conservatives have a terrible time swallowing that pill. So look for a lot of chaos, but I think at the end of the day, Republicans aren't going to let the government shut down, and they'll probably pass this all. Let me know what you want to hear at Freights. We'll answer your questions on the next episode of Political Persuasions. Thank you guys for listening, and thank you. Just download it. Just download it and tell your friends.
Next week, we will touch on the Judge Roy Moore election and find out his competitive election. It's not that he got elected yet. So we'll talk about that. Also, the tax plan. That's very much in the news. And then between now and next week, who knows who's going to drop next? You never know. And, you know, maybe the president will get caught with his tongue at the roof of his mouth again. You never know. This is Political Persuasions. Thanks for spending the time with us. Chris Freights, always a pleasure. And we will see you next week.
Thanks, guys.
Mike O'Mara, Radio Entertainment.